keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
It's What's the 411. Here again, Sharon Kay.
All right, to Nashville. Sharon Kay is in the house. Mighty glad to be on Jazzy 88 WFSK. And that fog has really come in from the river and everything. So you all be sure to keep that in mind if you're going out this evening or going getting home from work and stuff like that. Because some of those areas around the river and low-lying areas, that fog can get pretty dense and can keep your visibility way, way, way down. And I'm certain that that will be having an impact on the traffic. And Chuck will be updating us in probably about 15, 20 minutes. Anyway, I had mentioned to before the break about this big day for the veterans tomorrow. And it is the Nashville Veterans Job Fair. And I didn't realize, let me introduce Chris. You know, here I'm starting everything without nobody's last name, even though I have it here somewhere. What's your last name?
Stevens.
Okay, see.
I'll just call you Sharon, and we'll just go by that, all right? Sharon and Chris, let's do that.
And see, that makes my life more pleasant.
You don't worry about it.
Thank you. Because I had to do a shift of gear, and I was like, oh, Lord, what's his name? Chris is the Recruit Military's Senior Vice President, and you're also a U.S. Air Force veteran. Thank you for your service.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Now, thanks how long were you today. In?
I was in the Air Force for 20 years.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. You got stories.
I do. We'll do that off air. We'll talk about the stories off air.
Yes, definitely. Now, for those that are unaware, what is Recruit Military?
So Recruit Military is a company that's been doing this for more than 20 years, Sharon, and helping military veterans and spouses find employment. It's all different avenues. We have a what we call Search and Employ magazine. Mm-hmm. We have a job board. Let me tell you a little bit about that job board.
Okay.
It's recruitmilitary.com. There's over 240,000 jobs on that job board. It's not just a generic job because companies pay to have their job order on that board, and they want to be able to go through our database and see our military veterans and spouses. Mm-hmm. So, again, there's over 240,000 jobs on there.
And how many people are seeking?
Well, that varies from every day, but we have a database of about a million candidates, military veterans and spouses.
Wow.
No kidding, a million military veterans and spouses.
Wow. That's a lot. That's a lot. Mm-hmm. So thus the need for the job fairs.
That's right. We do 119 physical job fairs around the country this year. Obviously, I'm here. We're doing one tomorrow at Nissan Stadium, right where the Titans play, champions, right?
Almost.
I had to say that. I'm a Giants fan.
I'm a Chiefs fan.
Oh, God bless you. Then.
Okay.
God bless you.
I can tomahawk chop anytime.
So did you become a Chiefs fan just the other day, or have you always been a Chiefs fan?
I'm from Kansas City.
Okay. Well, then.
I'm a Kansas City girl.
That's awesome. Well, yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you. We're feeling blessed after 50 years of waiting.
You bet.
But you guys are expecting some thousands of folks to attend tomorrow, some veterans and spouses, etc. And when I saw that, I was like, wow. So the need is, and I've been hearing a lot lately about the need for employment or skill improvements, changes for veterans. Is that part of this, too?
It is. It is. I'll correct you, Sharon. We are not going to have 1,000 military veterans and spouses. I wish we were.
Okay.
We're going to have about 50, just south of 50 companies at the event. We're probably going to have 250 to 300 military veterans and spouses. But we're also doing Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta tomorrow.
Oh, wow.
And we're also doing it at Phoenix tomorrow where the Cardinals play, and obviously right here. So all together tomorrow we'll probably have close to 1,000 veterans, but not just right here.
Okay. Well, that's
but
good
I tell you, it's an
Nashville.
Exciting time. I could tell you the unemployment rate right now is below 3% for military veterans. It's the lowest it's ever been in the history of the United States.
Yeah.
And we got a lot of companies that are coming in here tomorrow, as I mentioned, and they're all paying to come in there.
Well, who are some of them?
Or we have or the police departments around the Nashville mm-hmm. area. We have Intel. We have we also have a lot of other government contractors that are coming in, a lot of healthcare, medical, okay. IT. So any military veteran or spouse, any type of background, there are opportunities okay. for them there tomorrow for sure.
So are most of the skills that you come out of the military with easy to fit into the workforce of today?
They are, but what we do is we help the military veteran and the spouse decipher what those skills are okay. so a civilian employee can understand those, right?
Okay.
And we have a resource center on recruitmilitary.com that allows military veterans and spouses, again, to help overcome maybe being scared, if you would, or where do I start? Like, how do I tell a military veteran? Myself, I was an aircraft mechanic. I fixed planes for 20
right.
years.
Right.
So I thought when I was going to get out, I was just going to fix planes. About hydraulics and pneumatics, you know,
yeah.
but it took a company like Bradley Morris, who's a parent company of Recruit Military, to teach me about my hydraulic and pneumatic background and how to talk about those skills to the civilian world. And we do that each and every day.
So are you does this come accompanied with an educational component, not just a fair, but maybe they might need help with their resume writing or having their online presence,
That's
you
right.
know, be up to date and
That's a great, great question. Yeah, we have webinars that we did last night, Jen uh-huh. Haddock and Heidi Miller on Team Transition. They help all veterans and spouses, help them write resumes, how to work a job fair.
Okay.
What do you say when you walk up to somebody at a job fair? So we
right.
teach that.
Right.
We have our resource center. We have webinars. I'll be doing that tomorrow to help military veterans and spouses as well tomorrow. But you bet there's an educational component, that's for sure.
Okay. Now, this is somebody had also said something about targeting, they work in the trades,
mm-hmm.
and targeting veterans. Are they coming out with electrical skills and, you know, the ability to be able to fill some of the positions that are, you know?
That's a great question on the trade side. You know, so Bradley Morris is the parent company of Recruit uh-huh. Military, and Bradley Morris has been doing this about 27 years, and we're I was hired on as Bradley. I've been doing this for 20 years since I've been
yeah.
retired.
Okay.
So Bradley Morris, what we do is we help military veterans that have a high-tech background, electricians,
yeah.
electronics, mechanics, junior military officers, academy grads, and engineers. And we're the best in the space that does it.
Okay.
But I can tell you, several years ago, we wanted a way to help everybody in the military, not just those high-tech individuals. As a matter
okay.
of fact, helping every if it was just the high-tech people, that's a smaller concentration of people than the ones that we couldn't help.
Right.
So then we wanted to partner up with a company that was able to help everybody in the military, not just those high-tech individuals, and that was Recruit Military. So we acquired Recruit Military back in October of 16. Now we do have the biggest footprint in all of the United States in helping everybody, not just those high-tech people. So it's electricians, electronics, mechanics,
yeah.
it's IT people, food service, truck drivers, and even some of the you know, the skills, maybe an E4 that's getting out with, that brings those skills that you were talking about a little
leadership
while ago.
Leadership skills, yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
So do you guys track the needs of the I know you. This is a national program that you're doing, but do you track the skill sets so you can, if somebody is wanting to move or do something regionally and they know that there might be higher pay and better position in Atlanta or somewhere
right.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you do that?
We do. We do. There's a term going around right now that's called underemployment. So maybe
uh-huh.
it's somebody that got out of the military. It could be 4 years or 30, and they take that first job because for security reasons, right? They take that first job when
yeah.
they get out, and then they realize, you know, this isn't really for me. I have maybe more leadership skills, so I'm underemployed.
Right.
And we tell them, hey, there's no better time to look for a job than when you have one, right?
Yeah. Sure.
I can tell you about our job board, and this might answer to your question right there, but on recruitmilitary.com, we have a job board, and there's a search engine in there. Now, sometimes it might be difficult for a military member to decipher all their skills. So
right.
they can put in to that search engine
That's
right
true.
There, Sharon, they can put in what their MOS is, Military Occupational Specialty.
Uh-huh.
In the Air Force, it's AFSE, Air Force Specialty Code. But it's a code that the military gives you that deciphers what your job is, if you would. But we partnered over a year ago with Google and using their algorithms. Oh. Yeah. Using their algorithms, now instead of trying to decipher all your skills and putting them in that search engine, you could just put that code in. And with the algorithms from Google, it'll pick out the highlights of what your skills or your job was, and then it'll tell you all the jobs out of 243,000. So let's just say if it was Atlanta, like you said, I can put in an MOS of 13 Bravo Atlanta, and it'll take every job that's out of 240 that is in Atlanta that's looking for people that have a 13 Bravo.
Wow.
It's amazing. And it, you know another good feature of that, Sharon, that's really able to help spouses, is now you can just put the word remote, right? Because military spouses are kind of at the mercy of the military veteran, right?
Sure.
They're educated, they're certified, they're degreed, they're experienced, but they might be setting a job here in Nashville, maybe at Fort Campbell down the street, and now their military spouse or their member is moving to Fort Riley, Kansas, right? And then now, I seen you smile when I said Kansas there. So now the military spouse has to go ahead and start all over again, right? But listen to this. They can go into that search engine right there and put the word remote and then put Kansas City. And then they can find all the opportunities where it doesn't matter where you live. You can work from home. There's over 9,000 jobs out of 240 right now where you can be remote. And it's we're hitting it out of the park.
Are you expecting, because of Fort Campbell, a lot, you know, of folks that may come from that area down?
We have a great, great relationship with the transition people at Fort Campbell. Great, great relationship. And they've been passing the word down. So, you bet we'll be a lot of soldiers and spouses from Fort Campbell tomorrow.
Right? Okay. Yeah. And is this the only Tennessee location?
It is. We come here twice a year. It is the only place in Tennessee.
So you're subject to see folks from east and west.
Let's hope so.
Yeah. Well, they best get a hotel and come on.
That's right. That's 11 to 3 tomorrow. It is. It's tomorrow at 11 to 3.
Is this active duty? What about reservists and people connected like that?
So it's Air National Guard, reservists, active duty. It's people that maybe have been out for 5 or 10 years as well. And, of course, spouses.
Okay.
So we help everybody.
Excellent. And give the location and the time and stuff for tomorrow.
All right. It's at Nissan Stadium where I won't say anything about the Titans, right?
No, you can say it. I mean, you know, I'm down with them when they're not playing the Chiefs.
Gotcha. But yeah, it's at Nissan Stadium tomorrow, Thursday, from 11 to 3.
Okay. Free and open to the public.
Free and open to the public. Come
Jump
on in.
There.
Free parking over near Gate C on the non-riverside, right?
Oh,
so the gates that are on the riverside,
gotcha.
Now come to the other side. It's free parking.
Okay.
And please come on in. Bring an umbrella. Looks like it's going to rain tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. Definitely going to do that. Going to get some of these positions filled. How you feeling? Optimistic about filling them in Nashville? You feel pretty good about it?
Absolutely. I can tell you, we our average now is we place about 137 military veterans and spouses at every single one of our job fairs.
Wow.
So I think we're doing three of them tomorrow.
Yeah.
I'm really, really motivated. We're gonna take care of a lot of veterans and spouses
That's
today.
Awesome.
You can imagine it's gonna be over 500 people we're gonna place just tomorrow.
That is awesome.
It's gonna be fun.
They're going to be getting those checks, bringing home the bacon. Yeah, that's all right. And, you know, when it comes to my birthday, y'all can make my check payable to Sharon K. I'm just kidding for my birthday. I'm just kidding. I hope that the community comes out in droves, the military community, because the people want to hire, and that's the beauty of it. They want
that's
to
right.
hire. Chris Stevens is the Senior Vice President of a wonderful organization helping the families, military families across the country. Recruit Military. And is there a website?
It is,
Chris?
RecruitMilitary.com. RecruitMilitary, one word, .com.
Excellent.
They can pre-register for the event on there tomorrow, but they don't have to. They could just walk in. It'll take them 30 seconds.
Oh, wow.
We'll give them one of our magazines. We'll give them an exhibit list. It'll talk about all the companies that are there tomorrow.
Yeah.
We'll take them around, introduce them to companies and so forth.
Wow. Well, that's an excellent, excellent source.
Thank you.
And resource for the community. And you guys keep us, you know, you do it twice a year. Let me know when you come back. And
we'll do.
Yeah.
I look forward to seeing you.
Yeah, because, you know, I'm daughter of a veteran, was married to folks. And, you know, I have much respect and love for our troops and our military and those that are no longer serving. We thank you. Oh, and Chris, again, thanks for your service. 20 years.
Thank you. Thank
U.S. Air Force.
Appreciate that. Thanks for having me
absolutely,
today, Sharon.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's take a time out, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. Life insurance is one of those subjects that makes people want to change the subject rather than admit they probably don't have enough. That's why State Farm agent Terry W. Jones focuses on how the benefits of life insurance actually live on by asking people to think in terms of life without having to sell the house, insurance, or life without having to give up college, insurance. Find out how the benefits of life insurance can live on for your family. Call State Farm agent Terry W. Jones in Nashville at 615-256-6066 or online at terrywjones.net and put the life back in life insurance.
Out of fear, victims of human trafficking rarely lift their eyes. Together, we can lift them up and free them from fear, abuse, and worse. Keep your eyes up and look out for anyone you think may be suffering at the hands of others. Call the Tennessee Human Trafficking Hotline at 1-855-558-6484. This message, sponsored by Street Grace and the Blue Cross Blue Shield of Tennessee Foundation.
This is the last weekend before Valentine's Day, and this weekend on Blue Salmon the City, it's all about love.
I took your advice, and I gave my spouse a second chance.
Miss Jody's talking this weekend about how she's trying to save love from the stage. And, of course, we'll play the best in love, blues, and southern soul. Join me, Rogene Bailey, for Blue Salmon the City this weekend right here. Catch Blue Time in the City Sundays from 8 to 10 p.m. right here on Jazzy 88.
Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
It's What's the 411. Here again, Sharon Kay.
We're all right to Nashville. Sharon Kay's in the house. Mighty glad to be on Jazzy 88 WFSK. And I just want to thank Sean Joseph, Dr. Joseph. I'm going to start calling him Sean, for bringing back my autographed copy of my book. You know, I had to give him a hard time. And he came back and he's waited all this time to drop it off and said some nice stuff in here, too. Thank you, Mr. Sean Joseph. Educator and author. Now, our Black History book for the first one for February. And I will say, as I introduce the author, that I'm happy to have Roy S. Wyatt with me today. And Roy, you doing okay today?
I am doing well, and yourself?
I'm excited to talk to you because let me tell you why. Somebody likes your work, okay? And
okay.
I got an email about you months ago. And one of the listeners, one of my listeners, and he said, could you please have him on to talk about his book? And I'm like,
wow.
I looked it up and everything and what it was. I was like, well, yes. And that's how this interview came to be. One day I'll look up the email and tell you who it was so you can thank them, okay?
I certainly will. I like to do that.
Anyway, you are a native of Virginia, which is where we're talking to you from now. And you have been involved and been in the military and been working on doing some writing and various things. You published 9 books. Clearly, you're a man that wants to use words to tell the story. And you also have, I'll just say, can I call you a researcher? There is no way you could be as extensive as this Color in America is if you were not a researcher. It doesn't say that on your background and on your information about the author, but you have done a tremendous job on this book, okay?
Well, thank you so much. As you can tell, you know, something like this requires a tremendous amount of research and dedication to put something like this together. I mean, I'm just happy that I was able to do it.
Well, you did it in magnificent style. It's a 314-page guide, illustrated guide to African Americans' pursuit of freedom and history in the United States of America. And I assure all of our book readers and the audience that you would definitely want to have this. This is a wonderful tool, not just for libraries, but for the knowledge of sitting around at your house. So you can, your self-esteem will raise seeing so much of what you've done. How did you get the idea to want to do this, Roy?
Well, you know, I'd already written, I think, about 8 books at the time, and about 3 to 4 years ago, somebody in my hometown, which is Montpelier, Virginia, about 40 minutes from where I currently reside at, approached me about writing a book referencing the hometown. Mm-hmm. And to make a long story short, I started kind of looking for information about where I was from and getting trying to get information, and it just wasn't a lot of information I could get. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of thought about, why just limit it to my hometown? Why not just do one on African Americans, mm-hmm, in general, you know? And so that's where, you know, it hit me, you know, hey, I'll go ahead and start doing that. But that actually what started me on the process of, mm-hmm, of writing a book about African American, mm-hmm, history. Mm-hmm. Because there's so much history that I didn't know, mm-hmm, that I tell you, after years of research, I have learned so much. I mean, I felt like I'm in school, you know.
Yeah.
I tell you, I really enjoyed doing it, and I'm glad I was able to put it together.
Well, and let me just let all you know, this is like the photos in here are just unbelievable. You start with, in chapter 1, with African kingdoms and empires, the birthplace, mm-hmm, of humanity and world's first civilization. You say, you write, to understand African Americans, it is imperative first to understand Africa, considered the birthplace of humanity, with the East African region of Nubia being regarded as the location of the Garden of Eden, where Adam, yeah, and Eve were born. And you just start from the in the beginning. You start from Genesis, brother, and you bring it all in. Yes, is that what made you think about that?
Well, you know what, I had saw a piece talking about it, and I just started writing, you know. Uh-huh. And like I say, I did so much research, and I just started putting together from the world's first civilizations, black civilization, which, uh-huh, was Egypt first. And then I just kind of went all the way down, you know. And so, of course, Egypt was one of the greatest African kingdoms that there were. Yeah. And it was befitting that they would be the first one.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Now, tell our audience some of what you cover in this particular section about Africa and Egypt. Because there's quite a bit, including some really wonderful photos. And then you've got this history. Mm-hmm. You do scripture and different facts about these kingdoms and et cetera. Tell us what's there.
Well, first of all, I have, of course, it starts off with Egypt. And then after Egypt, of course, I have the, I think it's the Kingdom of Kush. Which was another great empire that a lot of people have heard about but didn't really know about.
Uh-huh.
And then you have like the land of Punt, and all of these And I didn't know about all of these kingdoms or actions until I started researching it. Uh-huh. And so I'm like, man, I did not know there were so many kingdoms. And I don't have all of the kingdoms in there. I really don't. Huh. You know, it's impossible for me to try to put all of those Africa kingdoms in this book. I mean, if I did, I could do an entire book just on Africa kingdoms. So what I did, I picked out the most pertinent ones, the ones who were some the biggest ones at that time mm-hmm. that made the biggest impact on the region of Africa. So, and I just went down from Lander Point to the Nok civilization that a lot of people hadn't heard about. Ancient Carthage, a lot of people heard about ancient Carthage. I know that. Mm-hmm. The Kingdom of Aksum and ancient Ethiopia and Ghana and so on and so forth. So I just mm-hmm. kind of put together some of the greatest or some of the largest kingdoms that had the biggest impact in Africa at the time.
Well, I'll tell you, these Nubian, the structures, these Nubian pyramids are just mm-hmm. Perfect. I mean, the dimensions and the architecture is just unbelievable.
They are. And people are still baffled at the technology of those. Because, you know, back then we didn't have the technology of the day. So, you know, I mean, it's a wonder of the world. You know, I mean, they're still trying to figure out how these great pyramids with Bill was built with the technology back then. Uh-huh. You know, and they still haven't found out how it was done. You know, there's all kind of speculation. Mm-hmm. But, of course, we will never know. But the bottom line is they were done, and they were done superbly. They were done superbly, yes, and they're so gigantic, I tell you. Well, I can't believe the size of them.
I like the architecture because I like straight lines and things of that mm-hmm. nature in my designs. And I'm like, oh, I could take this home. I mean, because I'd never seen anything quite so perfect. You know,
right.
as
yeah,
these, yeah, they are. And also, there's some really, really interesting facts in here too, Roy. You say mm-hmm. on and page 23, and we're still in chapter 1, that unlike mm-hmm. Egypt, where I'm in the Kush section, you say, right, unlike Egypt, many of the Kushite leaders were queens. So now, mm-hmm. women in charge. The Kushites were smart
women,
people.
Exactly. Yes. The Nubian the Nubian kingdoms, they were queens, you know, unlike Egypt, where it was mainly the pharaoh was a male, but Kush, it was mainly the women.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of people don't know about it. I'm sure a lot of people have heard about it, but I just wanted to put these facts in the book so that if someone goes back and try to research it, it's all here.
Yes, it
you know,
is.
They don't have to look through 50 books in order to find out one thing. They could just look and get all the information from this one source.
It's not. And, you know, it's interesting that on this same page, there happens to be a photo of a marble portrait of a and that this portrait, this woman has twists, you know, like the children wear their hair now. And I'm like, now see, y'all thought y'all had a new hairdo.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, they thought their stuff was new and fresh. Mm-hmm. But this photo of this Nubia, is it Denizen?
Yeah, the Nubian princess. You know, I mean, there's nothing under the sun that's new today. You know, we may try to, we may think it's new by doing something different, but pretty much most things that we do today, it's been done before.
Absolutely.
You know, there's only so many different things you can do, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of things been done before. They just hadn't seen it or heard about it.
No. So somebody say they're breaking off something new. This hairstyle was on this portrait in 120 to 100 B.C., okay.
Exactly.
So there is nothing new under the sun. And when you were doing the research, Roy, how exciting was it for you to see that your people, ancestry, African Americans, your culture, your race, had done so many profound things, and yet most people had no idea?
Exactly. And that was really the census or one of the biggest reasons that I wanted to do a book about African-American history. Because, I mean, coming up, you know, a lot of the stories I was told kind of made me disinterested in African-American history, you know. And even though, and as I've gotten older, you know, I've learned that people have told me and I've heard about some of the things that African-Americans had done. But I hadn't really seen it. You know, I've heard about it, and you can always, you always hear about stuff. So what I wanted to do, you know, I wanted to research it, and I wanted to research it and get it out there so that African Americans can be inspired mm-hmm. by the things that African Americans, the people that look like them, had already done. You know, because most of the things that you see, most African Americans think it was created by a Westerner or a Caucasian mm-hmm. or somebody mm-hmm. other than their own lookalike or kind. And that is not the case. We have done so much, mm-hmm. not only for the United States, but for the world. And I just wanted to do a book that would kind of emphasize that.
Oh, you did.
So, yeah, I love the fact that I was doing something, you know, for African Americans. And I'm so proud of my heritage, of my mm-hmm. culture, mm-hmm. you know, as a result of this.
Well, I will tell you, you know, so much in here, you know, I've interviewed a lot of authors, but I don't recall seeing half of this. I'm serious now, because I've interviewed thousands. I have thousands of books on the show over the years. Yes. And the Axum Empire, I'm amazed as I look at this photo of this, as you're explaining what the that empire is and was in the 7th century, on page 30,
okay.
This 79-foot-tall monument.
Yes.
Made of granite. I'm like, how did they get that thing?
Can you imagine that? I mean, you know, can you just imagine something that tall? I mean, with the buildings and with the technology and with the tools back then that they were able to create something as with as magnitude as that.
Yeah.
It's just hard to believe, but we did it. You know, we did it.
What is this? What was this used for? Because it looks like a door is on here. It's a small area.
It is. And I think that part was used. I think they used those just like a lot of Egyptian pyramids. A lot of times they were used as burial areas.
Okay.
That wasn't really a door. They just actually put that on there to make it look like there's an entrance to it. But it's really not an entrance to that. And they did a lot of their obelisks back then like that.
So how many years did you have to work on this, Roy?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I tell you what, I think I was actually working on bits and pieces of this while I was still doing other books. But I think probably 4 to 5 years ago is when I actually first started working on this. In some areas was not, it didn't take me long to do some areas, but a lot of areas it did. In some areas I did not know anything about. For instance, Black Wall Street. I knew nothing, Ms. K, about Black Wall Street until one guy approached me probably about 2 years ago and asked them, and he knew I was doing a book on black history, and he asked me, are you going to write about Black Wall Street? And I'm like, what do you mean Black Wall Street? Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, you don't know about Black Wall Street? And I'm like, no, I've never heard of Black Wall Street.
Wow.
And he proceeded to kind of tell me what it was.
Sure.
And I researched that information. And, of course, once I found out about it, I put that in the book.
Yeah. Well, I've had 4 shows on that subject over the years with the mm-hmm. researcher and author in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And he's part of the ongoing effort to educate people on what the Black Wall Street is. And yeah, so my audience, I think, is quite familiar with that. And some of the young ones, they probably don't know. They're like, was there mm-hmm. such a thing? Yes, look it up, y'all.
Exactly.
Yeah, and it's in your book, too. Today's first Black History Month book is... and this is the Black America edition of Color in America, an illustrated guide to African Americans' pursuit of freedom and history in the United States of America. Author and researcher Roy S. Wyatt has worked tirelessly to bring this beautiful book. And you know, I'm going on like it's a new jacket or something. This is so exciting because there's so much knowledge here.
It is.
Oh, my God.
It is.
And these photos are unbelievable. Anyway,
right. Yeah.
let's take a timeout, or somebody has a question or comment for Roy. You can do that. 615-329-8810. Let's take the timeout, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. Life insurance is one of those subjects that makes people want to change the subject rather than admit they probably don't have enough. That's why State Farm agent Terry W. Jones focuses on how the benefits of life insurance actually live on by asking people to think in terms of life without having to sell the house, insurance, or life without having to give up college, insurance. Find out how the benefits of life insurance can live on for your family. Call State Farm agent Terry W. Jones in Nashville at 615-256-6066 or online at terrywjones.net and put the life back in life insurance.
Next time on Jazz Night in America, East meets West and the West meets the East. Tabla master Zakir Hussain and bass legend Dave Holland share with us Cross Currents, a world of ideas flowing between India and America. I'm Christian McBride.
Catch Jazz Night in America every Sunday from 2 to 3 p.m. and Wednesdays from 6 to 7 p.m. here at listener-supported Jazzy 88.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
It's What's the 411. Here again, Sharon Kay.
All right, to Nashville. Sharon Kay is in the house. Mighty glad to be on Jazzy 88 WFSK Historic Fisk University. And What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. We thank you so very much for supporting What's the 411? And before I reintroduce the guest tomorrow night, X, can you look at the schedule right quick and see what Thursday's Black History Show is for this Thursday evening at 7? Is the schedule right there?
It is. Let's see. Tomorrow is the 6th. So the Gospel Roots of Rock and Roll,
okay.
Hour 1.
Hour
the first
one.
Part.
Okay.
That's right.
That is tomorrow night at 7, right after Health Watch. So every Monday at 7 and every Thursday at 7 are our Black History shows. Whole shows. 60 minutes. Not seconds. Or half a second.
Not snippets.
Right. Not vignettes. Minutes. Okay, so tune in. And Roy S. Wyatt is we're happy to have him here from his home in Virginia. And if you have not yet seen this wonderful new book of his, this illustrated guide, Color in America, pick it up, y'all. Seriously, for real. And you know, a lot of schools and stuff need to have this in their library to help these children who have not a clue about, you know, from whence we've come. This would be so very helpful to them, and also for, you know, the Black History Month projects, so they can know mm-hmm. some things about something besides
yep.
whatever it is that they have there now. Now, Roy, do you have your book with you?
I do.
Okay, on page 58, I haven't left the Africa section yet because, frankly, it's a bunch in here. Timbuktu. Now, you know, people used to make fun of Timbuktu and make it sound like this and that. But you tell the story here about Timbuktu and what it was known for, what they did. Tell us about that section, please.
Well, you know, when I was researching, because I had heard about Timbuktu myself, and I just really kind of decided to write about the city of Timbuktu. But basically, Timbuktu was in the Mali Empire out of West Africa. And, of course, it flourished between, I think, the 13th and 15th centuries. And what it was an area where scholars from all over actually came there to get educated in so many different areas, you know. And, I mean, even some of the Roman Empire personnel actually came there as well. But most people want to say it was just Africa, but it was one of the very first regions or one of the very first areas that actually had that was a mosque actually for education. It was one of the largest at the time. And, I mean, it stayed the largest for centuries. And even today, it's still world-renowned. You know, I didn't know a lot about it at the time.
Right.
And I'm sure a lot of people didn't. And after I heard about it, I thought I'd go ahead and put it in the book. And I don't write the entire story on it. You know, but just a small section of it so that anybody reading it could get a gist of what Timbuktu was and how large they was and what they meant to the world back then and still today if they were to go back and research.
Well, and, you know, when people say, you know, Timbuktu, they or when they refer to it, it's always negative or, you know, as a butt of a joke and et cetera. But it's so funny mm-hmm. that it would be where these scholars were. You know, isn't that funny how people can turn things around to the opposite of what...
Always.
Yeah.
Always.
They always do,
especially when and I don't mean to cut you off, but especially when it didn't come from someone like them or look mm-hmm. like them.
Right.
Or someone that they wanted to, you know, raise up or what. If it was African... then of course it was certainly not looked at as something that they wanted to look up to, but when in fact it actually was. It's one of the largest, you know, education facilities at the time.
Mm, isn't that something? Now, see, this just, you know, Roy, I honestly feel, and this, I guess, for me personally, as the creator and executive producer of my show, and mm-hmm. that has had a very blessed long run. I've always wanted my focus here and my value and the time that the Lord has, you know, seen to it that I have on the air to at least be inspirational, informative, empowering. And what mm-hmm. one of the areas that I felt that our community at large could use was to feel self-esteem lifter, to feel better about themselves and empowered about themselves. And
right.
that can certainly be done through education. So having a focus on books and knowledge and things of that nature, I know that some people is like boring. But I'm like, look, mm-hmm. this stuff is not boring, honey. You can
not
be
at
anybody's table or any meeting and talk. Be somewhere where I can carry on a conversation about anything mm-hmm. in any of these books. This one, if you're self-esteem and you're black and you're worrying about all that old dumb stuff, you need to get a book like this one. And,
exactly.
And it will make you stop saying and doing all that dumb stuff because you're
exactly.
going to feel so much strong. You feel so strong. And it
yep.
just, I mean, yep. it's just, I appreciate you. I'm going to tell you right now, I do. Because you break it down to, you know, where a person can go from not understanding to standing up straight and being proud of who they are and from whence they've come. That's beautiful. Was that your goal, Roy?
It is. You know, the goal for writing the entire book as a whole was to inspire and motivate mainly African Americans, you know, include myself too. You know, I'm not naive to think that you know I don't need motivation, inspiration, but you know, all of that stuff comes from the past.
Oh yeah.
You know, my motivation comes from the past, and there are so many people, African Americans, but not all African Americans, who have done so much and gave their lives for us to have the freedoms and the liberties and the rights of the day that we just don't. We just take for granted every single day.
Yeah.
And, you know, my reason for writing this book was so that you can not only see that, but know that and be inspired by those actions
yes.
of those of our forefathers and what they had to go through in order for you and I to have what we have today.
Yes. And I will say to the reader or potential reader of the book that in chapter 2 is when you really begin to explore slavery in America. And
right.
because largely that is what is devoted to a lot of black history.
When, it is.
You know,
it is.
When
it is.
Stories are told. But, you know, the fact that you started all the way back further than that
right. mm-hmm.
is,
of course.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Now, let me go into this section, Roy, where the slaves and the people are past the 1600s and all that in a year or so in, and
mm-hmm.
Pick it up here in the area where you're talking about the wars, Revolutionary Wars and you know, abolition of slavery and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
That would be
right,
on page 89 forward. Tell us about
okay.
that section, please.
Well, from 89, I talk about the, now where am I at?
It's the,
this was the American Revolution War that happened,
yeah.
You know, from 1767, until 17, I guess 83 was the Revolutionary War. And it starts off with, what actually caused the war. And there were several things that caused the war. You know, Parliament passed, the Sugar Act of 74, which was increasing the number of items that would be taxed or imported by the colonies for the purpose of raising money. And then there was a Townsend Duties Act of 1766, which placed an indirect tax on glass, lead, paper, and tea imported. And, of course, there was custom racketeering going on. And then the British occupied itself, led indirectly by the Boston Massacre in 1970, when an angry mob incited a soldier to fire into the crowd, causing 5 deaths. Then, of course, we had the Boston Tea Party, you know, and then and there were some intolerable acts by Britain that angered Britain at the time, too. And I don't want to go into it all, but I'll just read a couple of sections of it.
Okay.
Like in March 1774, the Boston Port Act was passed. It required the Boston Harbor to close until compensation for the loss of the tea and the royal government. And then you had the Quartering Act was passed, which was allow colonial governor to house British soldiers in an occupied house and barns to ensure rule of British colonies were kept. And then the Quebec Act greatly extended the jurisdiction of the former French colony of Quebec and recognized the Catholic Church there while giving the royal governor increased powers. And the act also wiped out claims of Virginia and several other colonies appearing to favor the French-speaking residents of Quebec over the colonials of the older British colonies. And then at that time, America, we needed to split from British. You know, we no longer wanted British to impose taxes on us, to pretty much be in control of us. So that's how the war actually began,
mm-hmm.
right there. You know, we no longer wanted control. We wanted our own control. We no longer wanted the British to control us. We wanted our own control, and we needed to start a war in order to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But there were certain things that led up to the war, which was, you know, the Boston Tea Party, those intolerable acts and so on. And there were other things as well.
Mm-hmm.
But those were just some of the major things that led up to the split of us in Great Britain, you know, for the 13 colonies. After that, we became America.
Well, you know, I'd like to know how they got this lie started that I remember some years back when the politician from Georgia would make these stupid remarks and say things that black people have not been served in the military and all that. I just showed how ignorant he was.
Mm-hmm.
He had no idea. His people like that, you like for them to have a copy of this book. Because they just.
Well, you know, I didn't know either. You know, Ms. Kay, I didn't know. I had heard, but I really didn't know, you know, and you can only go by what people say. You know, because some people say things because, you know, they have their black pride and they don't really know. They just for the sake of saying, yeah, we was there, we did this and that, but you don't really know. So I wanted to go back and kind of study and research to find out, did we actually, you know, before I put something out, I really need to know.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I did. And I found out that not only were we there from the beginning of the wars, but yes, we were there not only from the beginning, the middle, and the yes, end of every single war. We have actively yes, participated. Now, maybe not to the extent of some of the Caucasians, because, you know, back then it didn't allow a lot of African-Americans right, to right, do, you know, what their brothers did. But we actively participated and made an impact in every single war that the United States or the 13 colonies at the time. Well, right, back then it wasn't America. They called it the New World,
right,
that the New World participated in. We have actively participated in every single war.
Yes. So when they when statements like that are made, people can just exit that out of their thought process because
they
that,
can.
You know,
they really can.
That is
yep,
absolutely untrue. Now, I want to go to, let me move to another area before my time is up. I want to get closer to today's times a little bit. Oh, you know what? I meant to ask you this on the front end. Is Tennessee in here?
Well, I don't know. Honestly, Ms. K, I do not know. It may be. I don't know.
Okay.
I can honestly say I don't recall.
Okay, because I was going to say, you know, I always, whenever I've had the Black History books on, some kind of way, there's something from mm-hmm, from here.
That now, if there may was a, you know, and I put in here a lot of the major rebellions or slave insurrections.
Yes. Yeah.
So maybe, you know, one took place in Tennessee that may be in here. I don't know. But like I say, I yeah, chose some of the most ones that made the greatest impact and put yeah, those in there. So Tennessee may be in there. I just don't recall.
I know, because we're right next to your state where you are. So
that's right. That's
know,
right.
I know you all know. We know the story there just like we know it here. But, you know, you guys endured a lot. Now, let me bring this up to a little bit more current. And then, of course, you cover the wars, all of them, from the mm-hmm, beginning up until where we are today. So if you're a veteran or someone in that likes, you know, to keep up with that, there's so much here and photos and women, Black women in the military and men in their service.
Oh, yes.
And different things of that nature. And you just cover this from the beginning to the end. And mm-hmm, I'm wondering what could be next, Roy. Is there going to be a part two of this guy?
You know what? I don't know. You know, I go where the Lord leads me, you know, and he come in the form of many. I mean, you know, somebody can come up to me and say, look, can you do something on this? And just them saying that could prompt me to do it, like they prompted me to do this book.
Yeah,
so,
yeah,
honestly, I really don't know. I hadn't even thought about a second edition yet. And if I write a second edition, I don't know what it'll be about. But, you know, I'm always thinking and I'm always listening to people. So wherever I'm led to, that's where I'll go.
Well, you make sure you get it to me, okay?
I certainly will. I certainly will.
Now, and last but not least, I want to go all the way to the eighth section, chapter section, African-American Inventors. And this is on page 275. There's so much here. And can you give a quick overview about who some of the people are you highlight and the inventions?
Well, not a problem. Some of the people are George Washington Carver. You know, he was one of the guys, one of the greatest inventors in agriculture. He invented so much stuff, but he's most famously known for in creating over 300 inventions with peanuts. George Washington Carver also did McKinley Douglas. He was the guy who started the refrigerated meals. So, you know, before then, foods could not be frozen and kept on trucks. You know, he actually started that. And then we go with, who was the other guy, computers? Dean.
Oh, he,
Mark Dean.
He was from Tennessee. I found somebody.
Ah, yeah. You did. Yeah.
He was born he was born in Jefferson City, Tennessee.
Yeah, you certainly did. You know, then Janet Emerson, you know, created, I think it was, what was it? I think she, EO Complaints software that's world renowned there, and most companies are using it. Then we go to Sounds and Home, where it's Marie Van Britten actually created the cable TV system. Most people didn't know about that. And then, of course, you got NASA and physics, where George Robert Carruthers created the first ultraviolet machine. And actually, his device stood on, I think it stood on the moon for over 20 years. And he created the telescope. Yeah, he created the telescope. And it was the first one that actually caught a comet. And then, of course, you had James Fortin and Thomas Jennings and Alexander Miles. And I think everybody knew Elijah McCoy. You know, his products were so superior than so many other people. When people started buying products, they wanted to know whether it was the real McCoy. And that's where he gets his name from. And then so on and so forth. You know, Jan Metzeliger, he invented the device where you could actually make shoes and make it affordable to everybody.
Yeah.
So those are just a few of the people that I chose to.
It's fabulous. It is absolutely fabulous. I urge you to go to the bookstore. Now, tell me where this is available, and then I'm going to let you get back to your living in Virginia. Where's the book, Roy? Where's it available?
Well, anywhere books are sold. You know, Amazon, Books A Million, Barnes & Noble. It's not on the shelves in Books A Million and Barnes & Noble, but you can order it through them.
Okay.
You know, Borders and so on and so forth. So pretty much anywhere books are sold through their online retail store, you can purchase the books.
Well, hopefully our neighborhood African-American bookstore, Keepalon Images, has it, hopefully.
I hope so.
Yeah, and they're right down the street, Roy, and might be listening. Okay. So I'm just saying. Anyway, I see you have a website here too, right?
Oh, yes. All of my books are actually on my website, roy-wyatt.com. So you can also order them there as well. I think I have 9 books right now. So, yeah, every one of them is, you can order them from my website as well as, you know, the other major book retailers.
Okay. Listen, I have thoroughly enjoyed chatting with you today. And do keep me posted on any future things that you're doing, okay?
I certainly will, Miss Kay, and I thank you for having me today.
You are certainly welcome. Thank you very much. Roy S. Wyatt is the author of this fabulous 315-page guide, and just fabulous. It's an illustrated guide to African Americans' pursuit of freedom and history in the United States of America, the Black America Edition. You shall be... It's really going. It's good. I feel good about all my books this month. You know how I do. Anyway, you all have the very best of the best, and don't forget who loves you.
You've been listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station and its management.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.